Welcome to episode 16 of Digital Outbox. Hello and welcome again to another exciting, super exciting edition of Digital Outbox. Joining me again is Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello there.
And Shaquille. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are we all? Feeling fine and refreshed?
Yep.
Something like that.
Oh, you're drunk as a skunk, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't want to get a reputation, but yeah, I have been drinking. Not this morning. Not yet.
You're just up?
Yes.
So, lots of insightful comment this week again.
Can I just say Eid Mubarak to all our Muslim listeners?
Eid Mubarak.
It is, of course, Eid today, so happy Eid to everybody.
Happy Eid, Shaquille.
Happy to you too, Ian.
Thank you very much.
Although you should be saying Eid Mubarak and I'll say Kher Mubarak to you.
Eid Mubarak.
Kher Mubarak.
Have I woken up?
No, careful.
Something strange just
unless
happened.
You want a free fatwa.
So, are you going to explain why you're going Eid Mubarak?
Yeah, it's Eid today. It's the end of Ramadan, so Muslims all over the world celebrate on the next day, and it's called Eid. So it's Happy Eid.
Hence Eid Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak.
So Eid Mubarak, Chris?
I can't remember. Don't do this to me.
It's all right. You won't burst into flames if you say it.
Although I'm starting to feel slightly hot. Right, let's crack on.
I'm having enough problem with my own language at the moment.
So, first story this week is eBay are being sued, and this is a follow-up to the Skype stories that's been on for weeks now, and to be honest, makes no sense whatsoever. Chris, you've been keeping an eye on this a bit closer than probably me and Shaquille, so they're being sued this week, yeah?
Yeah, officially the suit has been now put forward. For them breaching, eBay have breached the rights of the Jolted, which is the company that owns the technology that Skype sits on. So eBay bought a license to that. But as it turns out, or as Jolted are accusing them of having pretty much got hold of an unauthorized copy of their source code, amended that code, and then sort of handed it out to third parties. So by continuing to allow people to download Skype, effectively, Jolted are saying that they're breaking the license agreement they had. So the suit is for Jolted suing eBay for $75 million per day.
Per day.
So every day that people are still allowed to download the Skype application, they're increasing their suit by $75 million.
Bloody hell! This is I don't know, the whole thing's total madness. I mean, I've lost track of what eBay did buy, what they didn't buy, who they're then selling it to. They're still keeping a stake, but now they're getting sold by somebody. It's just crazy talk, absolute crazy talk.
Well, again, it's just, you know, how do we, as users, this doesn't sound like a good thing for us. As eBay have responded and pretty much said the allegations are just without foundation, you know, they're not based on good legal basing, and there's factual errors and all sorts. So we'll see where it goes, but it, you know, the story stepped up in that the suit has now been put forward.
But do you think this will just end up one of these out-of-court settlements at some point? I guess it will.
Well, either that or this is giving eBay the time to build their own proprietary underlying technology.
I doubt it. Mm. I can't see them going anywhere with that.
No. Personally, I'd like to see eBay get sued for all the money they've ripped off me over the years.
What, in PayPal charges?
Yeah, and all these sort of like final auction fees that they have, yeah, as well.
I don't know. In my eyes, eBay's quite a dirty company.
It's just getting worse and worse.
You know, it's like you go on there and you can't actually tell what's a decent auction anymore.
No.
I view everything suspiciously, and it's just not got a good reputation.
I think it's more geared towards now like traders, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
You know, instead of like the general public.
Definitely. I don't know, I just, even when you hear stories like people getting ripped off, and when you go there and they're saying, oh, you must use PayPal, you can't use anything else, PayPal is there to protect you. And then when something goes wrong, they do hee-haw about it.
Now, if you sell a CD, you can't put postage on it you know, like CDs, DVDs. I think games are included as well.
Ah, right.
And just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, that's actually, I don't actually mind that too much, because one thing I always objected to was when you saw somebody selling like a CD for like £5 and then putting like £5 postage on.
Yeah.
You know, see if they turn around and said there's a limit. So you know the weight of a CD and hence the limit is, yeah, you know, 60 pence or whatever, then fair enough. But
I still don't think that your dislike of eBay is a foundation to sue them.
I think it is. They're absolute scum. Absolute scum.
You won't believe the amount of money I've paid them over the years. That's why I'm a bit sore.
Speaking of money and sore, this week there was a leak online of the PAF, which is the postcode address file. So this is owned by Royal Mail, and it is a list of all the UK postcodes. And the actual proper file has all the names and addresses within each postcode, and it also has the geographical coordinates of that postcode area. And it's something that a lot of people, especially the Guardian over the years, have called for to be made free. Because if that information was freely available to developers, the amount of applications and useful services that could be developed online, you know, I think would be, it'd be far greater than what we've got today. Mm. So it's been leaked, which I actually, I mean, I've downloaded it. Well, I felt you had to. It was only 20 meg. It's a compressed file down from 240 meg. It's kind of interesting to see. It's just basically a big CSV file.
Yeah.
But it'll go out of date quickly. There's an estimate that there's around 4,000 new entries and 2,000 removals per month. So anybody going to use this file as some sort of platform for a service, it will quickly start to go out of date. And there's other ways of doing it, you know, through a wee bit of reverse engineering of some Google lookups.
Well, I hope you don't start using this file to send naked pictures of yourself to people. Because that'd be wrong.
Why was the first thing that came into your head a naked picture of me?
Well, I just thought, why on earth would you download it?
Because if I wanted to offer some sort of service that is either, you know...
Naked where is yourself.
Well, no, if I was like, you know, some sort of service where I've got the coordinates for an iPhone app and it's telling me where the postcode is, and then hence I can easily find houses in the area, schools in the area and all that kind of stuff. Sensible things, not good, sending good naked pictures. I wouldn't put a naked picture of me up, I'd just post it on the website.
I think part of the story was this, you know, should this information, like say, be available anyway, it's public, it's definitely publicly funded to generate this information. But I guess it's just that the licensing for this obviously supports the maintenance of it.
Yeah.
But it does sound like it should be a service that's available.
And it's a bit like the Ordnance Survey. Mm-hmm. There's always been calls for that information to be made freely available as well. There's pros and cons either way.
Yeah.
I think you'd see a lot more richer services available to the public if they were. Moving on, and BBC Watchdog this week seems to have made you mad, Shaky?
Not really. Oh, it's okay. I can't remember what day it was, but it was during the week. I don't normally watch Watchdog, but it was on TV, and I noticed they were saying that they were going to do an article on PS3s.
I thought you started watching it since Anne Robinson came back. Because a couple of weeks ago you did say you liked a bit of ginger, so I was just wondering if it was...
How far does that go?
She did look quite bizarre, but anyway.
Did you say bizarre?
Yeah, she's something different about her face. It's like...
Yeah, it's plastic.
It's new.
Probably. No, it was the sort of like, you started off saying... that there are like PlayStation 3s have a manufacturing defect. I'm sure they said it was the first generation consoles, the 60 gig ones, but I could be wrong. So anyway, I started watching it, and they said they were contacted by about 155 viewers with their faulty consoles, and they basically asked some commercial repair technicians who opened up the PlayStation 3s, and they found a problem. Which basically something to do with a solder. So basically it lights up with a yellow light, and some of the people in the gaming community have like starting to call that the yellow light of death, in reference to the red ring of death from the Xboxes. So anyway, they were saying, you know, there's it's like an inherent fault, and they contacted Sony, and Sony said, well, you know, we can repair these, but not for free. So what happened was they then went outside the Sony London offices and set up what they call them PlayStation Repair Action Team, I think it was called. And they were, and the show, they said that they were going to offer free repairs for anybody who's got a faulty console. But it's emerged recently that those repairs were not actually free, because the technicians who identify these faults would actually charge anybody who stopped, you know, outside their this shop that they set up. They would actually get charged for that. So that was, I mean, I personally thought the whole report was a bit inaccurate, because, you know, if 155 people complain, then that does not mean that, you know, the whole lineup has a inherent defect.
The whole report sounds completely juvenile and, you know, just sounds like an awful bit of reporting.
Yeah, got to be honest, I've never heard of, you know, I've obviously heard of PS3's failing.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of it as in the yellow light of death, or in any volume either.
Well, this is the first time I heard about it, so I didn't really give it much thought, other than that was a, you know, a rubbish report, and left it at that. But over the past few days on the internet, there have been, you know, a lot of hoo-ha. Gamesindustry.biz website, they had an article on their website saying the repair stunt that Watch Dogs set up fell flat on its face. Apparently about 11 people stopped to get their console repaired from them, but it emerged later on that I think kind of four of those consoles that were repaired were no longer working.
So right.
And there were a whole load of things. You know, they made it sound like there was, you know, like a big, massive problem, but it's now emerged that the number of faulty consoles that have actually been reported to Sony Complaints Department account for less than 0.5% of all PlayStation sold in all over the world. And you think, you know, that's not really conclusive of an inherent fault. Especially no. Compared to, like, you know, the confirmed failure rate of an Xbox, which is 54%, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I mean, I just need to think of all the people I know with an Xbox, and they've all had to replace an Xbox.
Yeah.
You know, so whether that 54% is like true or not, I've no idea.
Yeah.
My gut feel is it's higher. I don't know.
I think the last official figures were in the 35% region.
But yeah,
Microsoft figures, and you know.
I mean, just don't believe them at all. Fair dues to Microsoft, you know, that they repair them free of charge. Was it within three years? Yeah, exactly. But
they had to.
I was going to say, if there was only 0.5% failure rate on an Xbox, you wouldn't be getting the repairs free.
No.
And that's the thing. And it's like, that doesn't sound abnormal to me.
No. I mean, they have been criticising. I mean, the Daily Telegraph had an article on their website as well. And then there's another games website, The Sixth Axis. They actually sent an open complaints letter to the BBC. And some of the, I'll read a few of the things that it mentioned. One of them was that you skimmed over a 6-page letter from SCE UK, summarising their lengthy and apparently warranted misgivings about the way you were handling the issue in a few smirking sentences, which is actually quite true. Typical of Noanne Robinson. And then they also said that you failed to mention that your free fix wasn't actually free. And also there was no indication of why the problem occurred, no discussion of which models it was being reported for, and no information regarding possible preventative measures.
Yeah, but they don't care.
No. Other interesting thing I found out later on was that I don't watch Watch Dog, but one of the reporters says Ian Lee, who is apparently a massive Xbox fan.
Yeah.
So some of the websites are saying that, you know, the report was completely biased because of the only, well, whether that's true or not,
that sounds a little bit.
Well, I've got to be honest, it just seems bizarre that, I mean, I can understand Xbox being on Watch Dog. I think it was a year or 2 years ago it was on, just about the failure rates.
Mm.
And that all makes sense, because the failure rate was atrocious. I don't think I've known any other product fail as much as that.
I mean, the cynical side of me is saying that because the new PS3s have been released, and maybe Watch Dogs, I don't know, maybe they're not getting enough viewers, so they thought, we'll latch onto this and, you know.
I guess, you know, the other thing might be that they have actually, you know, if there are people that are suffering, you know, from this, they've banded together, they've sent in a whole load of letters to the BBC, so out of their mail sack of 1,000 letters,
yeah, they've
got 200 complaints about PS3, it's a big story.
I think BBC confirmed, you know, that 155 viewers contacted Watch Dog, but since then they've had like another 256 people complain. But
this isn't, I don't think that's much. No. I guess there's what, two, three, four million are going to watch that?
Yeah. And the other thing was, I think Sony are saying that that yellow light does not mean that the console has died. It's basically a non-specific light. So it could be like something, you know, like anything could go wrong. And right. The yellow light would come on. It doesn't mean the console has like died completely. So, but that's what Watchdog implied, that it's, you know, like it's sort of like your console is dead. It's a yellow light of death.
Mm. Maybe time will vindicate the BBC on this, but actually it just sounds like it was just a really badly conceived part of the joke.
That's what that is. I guess if you are worried, something that I know one of my mates has picked up on, you can trade in your console. So HMV for £70 will let you trade in your old PS3 for a brand new Slim.
See, that's the thing though, because you're getting kind of a bum deal there, aren't you? Because I think the original PS3s are actually superior machines.
Yeah, but I noticed it in Digital Spy and Edge Forum as well, and it seems to be, it's quite common. People are complaining about the noise off the new ones is louder than the old one.
And
what they're saying is take it back and get another one. It seems like it's like a high-pitched whine is coming off it. Yeah. And as soon as I read that, I was like, I ain't touching it.
Because you've got the same one as me, haven't you? The first gen.
Yeah.
And we've always got PS2 backward compatibility built into it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a couple of other features that are missing from the Slim, aren't there?
Yeah.
I still think the Slim's a nice proposition.
I think it's ugly. I'm going to be honest. And I know it's not a grease magnet like the older version. But when I look at it, I just think, I actually saw it in the flesh at the weekend at the first time. I was like, I don't really like the look of it.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? Because when the first one came out, people were like, quite critical of saying, oh, it's got the Spider-Man sort of fonts.
Yeah, but the new one just looks cheap.
I actually prefer also, the Spider-Man fonts.
Yeah, and I also want it to stand, so I would have to go and buy a stand as well. Oh, so it's like a £70 trading turns into, what's £100 I'm going to pay for getting a lesser quality.
Mm.
I don't think I'll be doing that. But if somebody was really paranoid or they were getting a yellow light, I'm sure they could trade it in.
Yeah.
Staying with the BBC... Chris, you've picked up a story looking at protecting HD content.
Obviously with FreeSat HD coming along, BBC are now getting pressure from sort of content holders or content suppliers that to protect their HD streams from pirating. Now BBC are required by law, you know, under their licensing to make sure all their content is free to air. So they've put in a request to the Ofcom to encrypt their TV listings. Now, what that will mean is, although the content when it's streaming over the air won't be protected or encrypted anyway, it means that any set-top boxes that haven't got the required license to decrypt the show listings won't be able to actually record those shows. So it's kind of stopping that recording process by the back door, if you like.
But you could still view it. You just couldn't record it.
With the licensing, you can even record it. But it obviously there'll be some systems put in place where you can't, and you know, it's protected. I basically DRM'd onto the machine, I believe.
Mm.
So there's been a bit of a furor about, you know, can this happen? Is this right? You know, BBC should be free to air, and you know, are people just overreacting again? You know, what is it particularly about the HD content that they're worried about?
I guess it's one of these things, isn't it? Because it's HD, the content providers want to sort of try and make money out of it or not give it away for free. So if people started recording it and they later on brought out the program that they had sort of aired, you know, say a month ago onto like a DVD or Blu-ray, people wouldn't buy it because they've already recorded it. I guess that's why it's like a revenue thing. They want to.
Yeah, I think that is the argument. Mm. But by the time that it gets onto FreeSat HD, the content's been out on, you know, different media formats, different HD content, you know, channels, downloads, all those things. It's been available for ages before it even gets to BBC broadcast. So,
yeah.
You know, it's already going to be out there. This isn't protecting anything.
Mm, it's an odd story, I must admit. And it's the only angle I can think is it is around somebody recording and throwing it up online, throwing up a good HD, you know, rip online.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see why else would be concerned.
That is it. But that, say there'll be those things will be all online long before.
Exactly. And platform. Fair enough. If it's BBC content, you know, if it's their own produced shows, you know, like Top Gear, for example, which we'll probably never see in HD. But I can understand that. But I guess
with things like Planet Earth, where they are, they are first to show.
Exactly.
But then that's not content providers putting pressure on, that would be BBC putting pressure on. And
exactly.
Not,
you know, if it was something like
to be.
If it's something like Heroes, for example, I mean, it's on America at least a week, 2 weeks before BBC show it anyway.
Yeah, but how many people do you know will actually download it rather than watch on, you know, like TV?
Quite a lot.
Yeah, but in terms of like percentages, I think. Well,
I don't know, because all I know, a lot of the people I know are geeks, you know, and they're not willing to wait, or they're not willing to pay for Sky or pay for Sky HD, or they won't get an HD box.
Scum.
Staying with scum. This week, Murdoch outlined some proposals just around how they're going to charge for news. So we mentioned this 3-4 weeks ago that they were talking about paying for news. So Wall Street Journal will start to charge a weekly fee for web and mobile access.
Mm.
So even paying for web access doesn't mean you get it on your mobile. You'll have to pay another $1 a week to get it on your iPhone or BlackBerry app.
Scum.
So you love that, don't you? So it's looking like a couple of dollars a week is the fee that they're looking to charge if you're wanting to get the content online and on your phone. And it'll be interesting to see how it pans out.
Mm.
I guess people that are used to web and mobile news like this are expecting it free, whereas you've got a generation that is quite willing to go and buy a newspaper, although obviously the sales of that are dwindling, probably because the content is free online. I still think there's going to be a place for this.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much. I don't know how popular it will be.
I think, obviously...
A lot hangs off this.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, a lot hangs off this. If this works for them, other people will join the bandwagon for sure.
Definitely.
I mean, I noticed that he had his boy out propaganding against BBC a couple of weeks ago. You know, and just sowing the seed of it's wrong for BBC to have a BBC news site, and it's wrong for BBC to be doing this, that, and the next thing with public money, because that's the biggest issue they've got right now. Is if they've got free sources online that are able to compete, then it's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on, Chris, Microsoft details about their application store have appeared.
Yep. So we've got a few more details. The biggest story of the week was it started off again, people up in arms, that Microsoft have put in a kill switch, what they're calling a kill switch, so they can pull an app off of your device if they so wish. So obviously everyone was a bit taken aback by that, but they have since come out and explained that it's purely to help in if they find that the software does cause harm in any way to your devices or there's unforeseen effects. So in the majority of cases, they would never do that. And if they did have to do it, they would offer a refund. So they've sort of released some of those kind of details.
Which doesn't sound, to me, that sounds pretty sensible.
It sounds like a very sensible thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are still, you know, the conspiracy theories and, well, you know, that gives them a lot of power and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's a sensible feature to put in.
Yep.
So revenue is going to be shared 70-30 in favor of the developer.
Same as Apple.
Yep. And any carrier costs taken care of out of the Microsoft side of things. It's going to cost a developer about $99 for the first 5 submissions, and then any subsequent submissions they're talking about another further $99.
So I don't know if you know, does a submission also include updates? So if I release version 1 that's got a bug, does my version 1.01 count as a submission?
It doesn't count as updates like that don't count as submissions,
right? Okay.
As far as I'm aware.
Cool.
There's the same rules going on as far as replacing core functionality of devices, so mapping and navigation and maybe dialing type of things will be rejected. But where this sort of scores over the Apple method is that just because you can't get it from the App Store doesn't mean you can't install it on your device. So if an app gets rejected for whatever reason, you could still go to the developer's site and install it onto your device. So they're not locking it down, it just won't be available in the App Store.
Right. And I'm guessing if it's not available in the App Store, the developer gets 100% of any revenue?
Yeah, I guess so that they don't get the benefits, obviously, of that advertising and people scanning through. But yeah, I guess that from what I understand, that yes, it's just a download of an application, as you would with anything else.
Cool. Well, just on the back of that, I don't know if you saw, there was a first video of a free app on the Zoom this week. And it was a chess application, which has a 30-second video every time you start. So every time you launch this, and it's a free game, but every time you launch it, you have to watch a 30-second video advert.
Which did look like a pain in the backside.
Yeah, and
but I think we've got to be careful here, because the Zoom is nothing to do... Well, the Zoom apps are nothing to do with the App Store that Microsoft are proposing.
Well, nobody's clear. And I think that's part of the problem, that they've not really... Because they keep on showing, there's been these clips of 3D games on the Zoom and applications on the Zoom, and nobody's clear whether it's... Are they one and the same thing, or is it a different thing?
No, they're kept separate. So the Zoom HD will not be using the Microsoft Store to start with. It may happen in the future, but
so where
these
do you
free
get,
apps and things...
Do you know where you get apps for the Zoom then?
I think it's a limited availability, and maybe it's got like its only little mini place to go and get them. But it's nothing to do with the major App Store at the moment, although that is probably on the horizon, but further down the road for sure.
And one other thing, just we were talking about Zoom, a developer took 12 hours to convert one of their iPhone apps over to the Zoom.
Hmm.
Now, there's no background to what was involved and whether it was a really simple game and most of the assets were the time-consuming bit. So, you know, having them already probably didn't take too long to do.
Microsoft are well known for their pretty, you know, impressive developer support and tools, development tools, so that probably helps as well.
Fanboy.
Yeah, it's true though.
Speaking of fanboy, Office Online?
Yep, so there's been some early testing of Office Online. So this is a sort of response to the Google Docs type of online sort of Office applications. So I just read a CNET report. I haven't actually had a chance to see any of this in the flesh, but they report that the bits they saw of it were impressive from a what they call fidelity point of view. So the online experience of these applications is very similar to the desktop experience, which is pretty impressive. They're saying the speed's not up there yet. It's quite slow, probably because the feature set's so high. And they're saying the sharing, the way that the documents are shared between users is fundamentally flawed. The actual architecture they've used is asked about it, basically, and needs sorting.
Mm.
And then the final point they said is that it works in Internet Explorer and Firefox and Safari, but it doesn't work in Google Chrome.
No.
And they weren't sure whether that was just a bit of a juvenile dig at Google Docs.
Well,
they've said it's about prioritizing.
To be fair, there was... And I'm trying to remember the videos that I watched. It was Robert Scoble had done a series of videos when the Office Online suite was first announced. I think he got some early access through his contacts at Microsoft. And it was things like, you know, Excel, it took about 40, 50 seconds to open up the spreadsheet. They did say that was because they're trying to keep the look and feel. It has a lot of, you know, they're saying it's the biggest, or Microsoft claimed it was the biggest online application in the world, just through the sheer amount of code that they're having to load. And they said at the time, i.e. Firefox, I don't think they even mentioned Safari, they said i.e. and Firefox were the browsers they were prioritising at the time, and those were the two they were working on, and they said that was purely based on market share and also time.
So that's pretty consistent, but if you want your apps to work quick, then maybe it's worth prioritising Google Chrome at the moment, because that...
Well, I think if they want your apps to work quick, to work quick, you wouldn't... I mean, the amount of add-ons they were adding in was massive. And it looked, I mean, the documents and the Excel sheets all looked great, but, you know, working online, you know, do you really want to be loading Word, or are you just wanting some quick editing?
Yeah, and I think that's, so they've obviously taken that different angle, and I guess we'll have to wait and see whether that's the right choice.
Indeed. Right, a few Google stories to rattle through. The first one I picked up on was Google Data Liberation. So there's a new website they've set up called dataliberation.org, and it's all about how to get data out of and into the Google tools. I just thought it was quite nice to see that finally somebody's properly addressing, making sure that you're... And it, obviously it's good from their point of view, they're trying to show you how to take data into their tools, but also showing you how to get it out if you want to move away from the platform.
I think this is... people should follow this lead. It's definitely the direction that we want to see companies go in.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's always been held against something like Flickr. And it's a great site, but if you try and say, I want to export all my photos, it's not the easiest. Another thing that they launched this week, which I was kind of a bit mixed about, Google FastFlip. It's a lab application. So I guess it's in beta, or I guess this is a before beta, it's in their lab. And basically it's a whole series of, what you can see is the front page of a whole load of different news organisations or magazine sites. It also works on iPhone and Android, and you can just flip through these front pages. And you see an article, or you see a front page you like, you click on it, it takes you to the website. It's a great, a really quick way of skimming the news that day. And what they've got is a shared advertising deal between Google and the partner sites. The only, I guess, downside, it's like a rendered image you're seeing. You can't actually click on an article link. So if you just wanted to see an article, you can't click on it. And just as soon as you see it, you think, great on the phone, nice for a tablet. But I don't see it really taking off. But an interesting idea anyway.
Yeah.
Google Chrome 3, Chris, was launched this week.
Yeah, well, so they've taken it out of their beta phase. I'd actually been using it a little while before through the beta, but now they've officially released it. So we've got the usual speed increases, which they announce most times with their new versions. They're saying about 150% on JavaScript speed, which sounds pretty impressive. I mean, whether you actually notice all these things in daily life now, I don't know. I think we'll notice it more when the applications do get a bit heavier.
Yeah.
what they're trying to do. But yet faster, they've done their homepage, they've had a few tweaks on, they've got some HTML support and themes. They've been working on themes for the browser. I did a quick screencast, which is on the main website, if you want to have a quick squiz around all those features. Doesn't take long.
Was that a new feature you did that screencast on?
It wasn't. I think we'll find out about that later.
But no, I think me and Shaquille both, I think the screencast was really good.
Yep.
Very impressed. So as for Chrome, there's still no Mac version officially, but by year end, they say they'll have a Mac version out, which I think will be very good. What's interesting is they've currently got 3% of the market share. Within the next year, they hope to go to 5%, and within the next 2 years, 10%. Which doesn't sound overly aggressive, but when you realise what they're trying to penetrate into...
Yeah, but with their licensing, they're announcing that they're going to be distributing their browser through Sony hardware. So I think they've been quite realistic with that.
Doesn't
sound impossible, but...
Well, what seemed to be in the other articles about it was that was the public percentages they're putting out, but privately they're hoping to get more near 15-20%.
Right.
Which
does sound harder.
That sounds really hard. Staying with Google, more news on the App Store rejections. So yesterday Google finally took the redacted sections off their FSC submission. And basically they're saying it was rejected. And I've got the proof from Apple. It was actually Phil Schiller that got in touch with them and said, your app is rejected. So this is...
Get out.
Well, and this is the thing, that somebody's lying. You get two massive companies. Google likes to say it doesn't do evil. Apple likes to have the whiter than white image, but we all know they can be quite dirty from time to time. Somebody's lying. And
you know what this reminds me of? The Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky. I did not have sexual relations. I didn't reject that application. I just said that it would never be approved.
Yeah. And I still think at the bottom of this, it's going to be Apple that's been found to be at it, and they'll eventually let the app in at the store. And nobody else has a view on it. Fantastic.
Okay.
Staying with Apple then. Shaquille, Apple TV price drops.
Again, I'm always disappointed when I read anything about Apple TV, because they've got a good enough product which can be a lot better, but they don't seem to be pushing it as much as they should do.
No, definitely.
So, it's had a price drop now, and I think it's about $229 in the US for the 160 gig version.
Yeah.
And they've got rid of the 40 gig version completely.
Indeed.
So.
And it's £219 in the UK for the 160 gigabyte version.
Mm-hmm.
So, big saving there for us UK guys.
Yeah. Personally, I'd love to buy it, but, like we've discussed before, I think they just need to add a bit more to it, maybe open up a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think that's what frustrates me. It's the fact that it's all tied in with the kind of Apple codex, and even if you spend £219, to get the most out of it, you still then probably want to hack it a little bit and add in some codecs and tweak the front end and bring in boxy support. And
yeah, I mean, if they run a sort of like bite into that, you know, underneath the TV sort of area with a device, then they need to really add like an optical drive in it. And hopefully Blu-ray, and you know, then that'd be like a no-brainer. You know, you've got like all your stored media that you can access from your Mac or your PC, and then you can also watch your Blu-rays on it. I would happily, you know, buy that.
Well, I think if you look at the Mac Mini, Mac Mini's £500. See if the Mac Mini stayed at £500, but it was a Blu-ray player instead of the DVD.
It's a no-brainer.
You know, I would happily pay that.
Get a wireless keyboard, wireless mouse, Bob's your uncle.
Happily pay that. And if they were really aggressive on it and said it's actually 400, because the problem you've got is you're competing with 360s and PS3s.
Yeah.
But I still think the potential for a media player is better on a Mac Mini than it is on a PS3.
Well, I mean, you know, you've got to base on the sort of Apple user experience. It's always like, well, most of the time it's first class. So you can just imagine if they had a device like that with a really good interface, you'd be laughing. You know, you can access all your media that could be stored anywhere. And
I was having a look around this kind of arena the other day online, and there was a product called, I think it's Kaleidoscape, which is effectively a legitimate media sharer. So again, you shove your discs in, you tell it to import, and it has a really nice graphical user interface that, you know, that just looks very Apple-like and pretty good. But and it's the only legal one, apparently, you know, that fully complies with all the kind of licensing and whatnot. But £7,000 that costs. £7,000. So I was getting quite excited about it. I mean, they cleverly don't tell you the price ever. So I was getting all quite excited about thinking, well, this looks quite good. And actually, I can put all my movies on there and watch them. £7,000, not a chance. £400 for a Mac Mini, I'd be tempted if they could replicate some of that functionality.
Well, and it's something that we need to come back to a show at some point, because we did Plex 1 week, and I still think Plex as a front-end media player was superb. I absolutely loved it. Boxy, I think, is another strong contender, both based off Xbox Media Center. I just think if Apple took, even if they bought Boxy or bought Plex and actually said, here's our front-end now, here's what we're going to do, here's how we can actually, you know, tag your local media. The problem is, it would be then acknowledging that people have got these massive media libraries, which no big company really wants to do. It's almost like a kind of, it's a hidden known that yes, you've got lots of probably illegally downloaded media, but we can't really acknowledge it, and we're not going to provide you a tool that's going to help you manage that either.
I imagine one of the things that's holding back Apple from developing the Apple TV that much further is probably because of that reason. Mm. You know, like, people will be able to download their movies and music illegally and then just stream it, and then also have like the functionality of a standard, you know, like a Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
And then they've got their iTunes thing going with them, you know, nice interface and movies to download and buy. They would sort of lose that side of things, wouldn't they? And I suppose then there's a lot of legal issues as well with the movie companies trying to keep them happy as well.
So I can't figure out is the price drop, and so it used to be £263 for 160 gig here, so they've taken £50 off. Is this the last chance for Apple TV? Have they said, right, we're reducing the price to something we think is acceptable? And I don't know why they didn't go for like £199. We had all that big fuss about £199 for the iPod Touch.
Magic figure, yeah.
The magic figure, and then they reduced this to £229 or £219. You know, it's like for $30 or £20, you tell me you couldn't hit your magic price. But anyway, is this the last hurrah for it? Is this the kind of final chance for them to say, here it is, that's as cheap as we can make it. If people buy it, so be it. And if nobody buys this, it's game over.
Mm.
And I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think the 40 gig one, it was always, to me, it was always like an awkward product. It's such a small disc. I mean, at least 160, because you've got your PS3s and your Xbox 360s are coming with bigger discs than that. And you're getting a great games console at the same time. More rumours this week about new hardware, Shaquille.
Yeah, there's I haven't gone back to that to see whether it's been confirmed or not, but a lot of the websites are reporting this. The iMacs and the MacBooks will be seeing a refresh in the next few weeks. And I'm pretty sure I read somewhere as well that the iMacs could possibly be like a slightly thinner design than they currently are. I'll have a quick look later on to see if it's been confirmed anywhere.
The last I saw was it's still rumours, but the iMac refresh was more stronger than the MacBook.
Right.
I think just based on time as well, it's a couple of years since that line's been refreshed, you know, from a design perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the MacBooks are fairly recent, apart from the kind of plastic ones. Now, we've all got iPhones, and there seems to be some issues with the latest update. Shaki, you want to take us through? Because you've been having some of the issues that people have been complaining about.
Yeah, I'll... The issues I've had are random shutdowns, which have been reported on the web. Now, the problems I've been having is, you know, like when your phone is on standby and normally I either press the home button or the power button at the top to activate it.
Yeah.
And I'll do that. And what normally would happen is you'd get that that screen popping up where you slide to unlock.
Yeah.
It's almost like you get like the screen sort of flickers and then it stays black. And then you try again and then nothing happens. It's like almost like it's been powered off. So you try to power it on and still nothing happens. So the only way to get it back running is to do, you know, that reboot where you hold the power button and the home button down for a few seconds. And then it sort of like reboots itself. And it happened once and I thought just, you know, something fluke. But it's happened like at least 3 times now, if not 4.
That's not so good.
And occasionally I've had like screen freezes as well, where the screen just freezes for like about 4 or 5 seconds. So I'd be like, you know, swiping to get onto the next page and it just stays where it is. And then after about 4 or 5 seconds, it'll then sort of activate itself. I've had it like slow down, no right down. So you do like swipes and it's almost like a jitter. It just sort of like jitters along. So lots of things like that, and I've also, you know, like I think we discussed poor battery life a while ago.
Yeah, because I felt when I got the 3 update before I passed on my old iPhone 3.
Yeah.
Or the iPhone 3G, sorry, I felt the battery life was just slightly poorer.
Yeah, I mean I've not really noticed that to that sort of extent, but since I've been having these sort of like random shutdowns, a couple of times the battery has sort of, I think it's died on me. Because I like charge it the night before and it will say full charge in the morning, and then come 4 o'clock, it will just sort of like die completely. I would have to like charge it up. It's only happened a couple of times. But other than these issues, I think there have been some tethering issues that you might have come across.
Oh, I missed that as well.
Yeah.
I found that story, and basically they blocked tethering on any unlocked handsets, whether they've been officially unlocked or unofficially jailbroken. So a legitimately unlocked handset running on a different carrier cannot use tethering on that carrier. They've taken away those features in 3.1.
Get out.
And there's Apple's support basically saying nothing we can do to help you. That's just the way it is.
Kill surprise. That's quite nasty. Because if you'd moved over and thought you were going to be able to get that feature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without having to pay inordinate fees.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, I mean, I've posted a link and I'll post it in the show notes as well. There was a, in the Apple room in FenFeed, somebody had put up has OS 3.1 screwed up your phone? And it was about 30, 40 replies saying, yes, it had.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely not. Definitely not an uncommon problem.
Other than my failed installation, when it, you know, it had to go through a full on reconstruct process to get my iPhone back, I've noticed occasional pauses where, you know, you might have written a word on via the keyboard, and then about a, you know, a couple of seconds later, suddenly that word will then ping all in. So there's definitely a couple of stutters and delays here and there, but I can't say that I've not noticed any difference to 3.1 from the older one. So. I've certainly not seen the power on problem that you've been.
Is it worth trying to restore? Maybe.
I don't really want to do that, but I mean, I could try it. I mean, I think there is a genuine problem, and maybe not everybody suffers from it, but there's got to be.
Well, if you remember, I used to have it where, you know, every 3 weeks or something, it would lose all my applications.
Yeah.
It would lose authentication. I had to basically start again. And that went on for about 8-9 weeks. Mm. It was horrible.
I'm just wondering, because 3.1 came out when iTunes 9 was released, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think we were talking earlier on, you've had iTunes crash on you a couple of times.
Just right in my tits, to be honest, because it's working fine. I know people have issues about iTunes being slow, and it's, and fair enough, feature-wise, it's just got so many features in it now. It just feels like, it feels like an old application. It's quite creaky. But if I don't, if I try and access the store, and I just do a search in the store, and I get a little beach ball will come up, and it'll just crash. And then when it's opening up, it's checking my library, and it sits for about 2 minutes checking my library, which is a big library, but, and it's done that 4 or 5 times now. So that's quite annoying, because that just used to be pretty rock solid for me. Didn't have any iTunes issues at all, and now I do.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a genius checking it.
No, I think it's the, seems to be all around the, you see it when you go in the store, and it just seems to churn about loading in that top bar, and it just seems to crash. It's buggy as hell. I'm looking for a 9.01 next week or so, because there's a lot of people complaining it's quite crashy. Staying with iTunes, I don't know if you guys have bought an LP yet.
I
ponied up on Monday morning for Muse and The Doors just to give it a try. And I was quite impressed, but not overly.
Yeah, I think it's a nice sort of thing that they're trying to add some more sort of like value to your downloads. The benefit of it is, I personally don't see any benefit, because I don't sit in front of a computer when I want to listen to music. So the whole idea of having, like, you know, fancy artwork and menus is lost on me.
Yeah.
But I imagine, again, going back to Apple TV, if they, you know, if there's a lot of people bought Apple TV and started listening to music through that, then, yeah, it could be something useful.
But I guess that's a bit that surprises me, that they've launched it, and I would expect them to have launched it and said, and by the way, we're updating iPhones and iPod Touches, so you've got a really nice front end on there. And by the way, there's a new update for your Apple TV today that allows you to take advantage of this content on there.
Yeah. I just can't see this working on an iPhone, because that file that you download to give you all that fancy...
Well, I'm not saying... What I'm saying is, like, not take... So it's 500 meg was one of the ones I downloaded, and it was a whole load of video. What I'm saying is don't take that. But I'm surprised I've not got a... You know, they've got templates, obviously, for the desktop. Why didn't they have a little template that takes some of the content and makes it accessible on your iPhone?
True.
And I mean, I think it was the Jay-Z album they're talking about. There's some really nice graphic equalizers on there. And again, when you look at the Zoom HD, it looks an amazing front end. You know, and if you start putting in some nice animation options on your iPhone, it'd be really nice.
Well, hopefully, you know, maybe they'll add something to that in the future.
True. My final little bit of Apple news, as Chris breathes a sigh of relief. There's a game called Meteor Blitz, which I think was just launched in the last week. It's £1.19. It's actually a very, very good game, very addictive, and it's exactly the same as Super Stardust HD on the PS3, even down to it looks like some of the graphics. So the whole concept is you've got a ship, you're on a planet, you've got asteroids to blow up, you've got some other bad guys to blow up, and you've got three different weapons that you power up as you fight through the game. It's really nicely done, but I think this app is going to get pulled soon, because I'm sure they've ripped some of the content, not even just the how it plays, but the actual graphical, you know, the graphical assets look as if they're ripped from the PS3 as well. It just looks too close to it. But it's actually a very, very nice game, so well worth £1.19. And moving swiftly and neatly onto gadgets and games. Chris, copywriting games get sneaky.
Yep. Eidos snuck in a bit of copyright code that checked whether they thought the game had been bought officially or illegally copied. And basically, if they thought that your game was an illegal download, it disrupted function from the game, so it actually just took away your ability to glide and things like that, so your character just splattered to the floor ceremoniously. And they did catch, they've already caught one person out who posted onto the forum that there was a bug in the game because, you know, his Batman wouldn't fly. And they replied pretty much saying, that's because you downloaded it illegally and there's not a bug in the program, it's a bug in your moral code.
That's genius.
Get out, you dirty pirate dog. That is class, actually. And I guess it's things like that would solve a lot of piracy. If you were downloading a game, and if you're downloading like a racing game and it turns you into a little, you know, a really slow car that you just couldn't compete, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Class. Chakio, Uncharted 2.
Yeah, there have been some initial reviews floating about on the web, and all of them seem to be like really, really positive. The funniest one is from a French site who normally score their games out of 20, and they've given it 21 out of 20, which I thought was like, you know, stupid, really. But I suppose they're just trying to show their enthusiasm about the game. US official PS Mag have given it 5 out of 5. And so yeah, I mean, it's looking really good. Can't wait to buy it and play it.
And it's out on the 16th of October in the UK, which isn't that long.
No.
And it's actually I'm almost like giddy because it's like
I'm so happy.
I'm so happy because I've just got a shipping notice that Halo's been shipped for me. This is like the kind of start of all the big games starting to come out. So it's Halo 3 ODST that's out this week, which I know me and Chris are getting.
Certainly am.
And I can't wait to play. So I'm hoping it's through on Tuesday.
Okay. One interesting thing about Uncharted 2 is that it will tweet your trophies on Twitter.
I saw that.
And also your connections to a multiplayer game as well will tweet that.
Which part of me, and I thought, nice to have, but is it like if I play, like, I don't know, if I played the game in three separate sessions one night, is it going to send out three tweets?
Yeah, possibly.
It's a bit like the, you know how there was the stuff added into iTunes saying, you know, buy this song?
Yeah.
You know, and I just wondered, were we going to get bombarded with people just going, buy this song, buy this song, buy this song?
Yeah.
But I've seen none, so...
Cool. Sticking with PS3, there's another thing that I noticed which kind of annoyed me a little bit. There's a game called Trine, which I believe has been out on Xbox Live for a while, and on the PC as well. I thought it had. I know it's definitely out on the PC. It's been.
I think it's just
recognize the name.
I think it's just PC.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
It's now out on the PlayStation Network as well. But what annoyed me about it was up until now the most expensive game I've seen on PSN has been like $11.99,
right?
Which was, I think, the last one I saw was Street Fighter 2 HD. This one is being released at $16.99, which I thought was like way. Well, it's not too much when you think about it, but the game itself is apparently quite short. So I thought it's a bit cheeky asking that much money for such a short game. And I'm just wondering whether this is going to be like the new premium price point for future, like, highly rated games.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're trying it at that price just to see if they get, you know, what return they get on it.
Yeah, so that's out. And
Did you buy it?
No, I really want to try it out, but I thought, because no, you know what I'm like, usually I'll download a game and not play it, and I thought if I'm going to do this for this, then I'm not paying 17 quid for it.
Do they offer you a demo download at all?
I don't know if there's none at the moment, but you never know, they might bring one out in the future. They've done that recently with a couple of games where the actual full game has come out without a demo, and then a few weeks later they've released a demo to like entice people.
I mean, that's one really good thing about the Xbox Live arcade area.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's every game that comes out always comes out with the demo that you can try out first.
Yeah, I mean, usually there are like demos, but recently they've been like launching the games before the demo and then launching a demo afterwards, which is sneaky.
So, finally for Gadgets and Games, we've got news on some new Microsoft Xbox packages.
Yeah, they've... I don't know if they've been officially labelled as Super Elite or not, but some of the websites have been reporting them. They're like Xbox bundles, And bundle one will be the Xbox 360 with two wireless pads, a headset, and a 250 gig hard drive. And Forza 3 standard edition at £250, which is out on October the 23rd. And then there's another bundle, same as above, but instead of Forza 3, you get Modern Warfare. And there's been no price confirmation of that yet, but I'd imagine it'll be the same, £250. That's out on November the 10th. And I'm pretty sure that the Modern Warfare pack has got like a stylized box, you know, the Xbox.
Oh, no, it has. Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same with the Forza one or not, but...
I thought it was.
Right. Which I thought was quite nice, you know, getting something a little bit different to the usual stuff.
And yeah. Sounds like good value as well.
Yeah.
That seems like a very good
value. Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, £250 is, I think, quite appealing with them, especially with two wireless pads. Now, normally, you never get two pads in any bundle.
No, definitely. I mean, for me, it's a great Christmas bundle. Somebody's not got a 360 right now.
I think that
gives you everything you need.
I think they missed a trick, and they should have added, the wireless adapter. Because then that would have been a really good sort of comparison package, you know, next to the PS3, because that's £250 as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
problem being that their wireless adapters are so expensive that.
But there are rumours of a new wireless adapter coming out.
Yeah, is it the N, wireless N?
Yeah. So
I wonder how much that would be.
Too much.
Right, but anyway, that bundle seems like they've hit the spot.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, no, I think so. So we'll move on to some exciting picks. Chris, why don't you take us through our first pick?
Yeah, so just part of my looking around as I do during the week, I found or came across Jing, which is screencast capture, basically, for PC and Mac. It's a simple download, nice looking bit of kit, and basically you can capture what you're doing on screen and record your voice over the top of it. Works perfectly, it's just dead easy to use. It's slightly limited in that you can only capture 5 minutes of content, but for small little projects it's great, and they've got sort of a bigger, more in-depth package, which is a purchase price. I think it's called Camtasia or something, which is there you can fully edit then and things like that.
That is the main package.
But for little simple uploads and things, this is just great. I'm really happy. I mean, I've already done one on the Digital Outbox website for Google Chrome. So if you want to take a look at the output of what Jing's capable of, then you can have a look there.
Fantastic. And that's also for Mac as well as PC?
Yep, it's for Mac and PC.
So works well.
Link will be in the show notes.
What? I guess I'll find a link for it then.
I'll put it in.
Thanks. Shaquille, what's your pick this week? And I can't wait for your pronunciation in this one.
Well, the iPhones, the new ones, I think, don't come with a dock. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep. And even the previous iPhone, I don't think, came with a dock. And I'm assuming, similar to my situation, there'll be a lot of people that just use a cable to, charge their iPhones. And so I kind of like miss having a dock, but I just don't want to pay that price that Apple are charging for it. So my pick for this week is there's a French designer called I think this is how you pronounce it, Julien Maderou, and he's basically a designer, and he's designed this template which you can download and print onto a card if you have a cable printer. And then all you do is the instructions are all on the template. You just cut and fold this template into the shape of a study dock, and it's free. I've not really tried it because I've ran out of ink on my printer, unfortunately. So I can't print out, but I'll try and maybe print this out at work during the week. And
tell you what, I'll print out today and I'll send it down to you.
Yeah. See, the thing is,
because
I don't think you can print onto like paper, because I don't think that'd be sturdy enough. So
no.
If you can print to a card, then yeah, that'd be good. So, I mean, looking at the pictures online, it looks, quite functional. And I think it looks quite cool as well. So we'll add a link to the show notes and you can try that out for yourself.
Cool. I guess that means you could put your own designs on top of it as well if you wanted to.
Yeah, you could use a coloured card or anything.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, my pick this week is something I've used for most of this year on the iPhone, and it's an application called RunKeeper. What's really nice about this is it tracks, using the GPS on the iPhone, it's tracking your position. So if you're doing runs, cycling, walks, trails, anything outside, it'll track your route. Once you've finished tracking on the iPhone, you then upload it to their website. And I've actually been making a whole series of improvements on their website this year. So you can go in and view your actual route. You can see the height elevation changes. You can see your speed over your whole walk or cycle. You can also, which I think is really nice, you can overlay it on top of Google Maps. So you can swap between the usual satellite view or map view. But you can actually export your coordinates into a Google Earth format and then load that up in Google Earth. So for me, it's a really... So I've been a bit different this year and started taking up hill walking. It's been great. I've now done 6 or 7 hill walks, and it's worked superbly for each one. There's 2 different options. There's a RunKeeper Free, which is ad-supported, and a RunKeeper Pro, which is ad-free, but also lets you hear audio cues. So if you were wanting to hear stats, if you're out on a run and you're wanting to hear, you know, pace and trying to count down your miles, etc., it lets you hear that via your headphones. And they're also adding training workouts as well. And one feature they're talking about adding is the ability to take in if you're actually doing runs indoors at a gym, or you're on an exercise bike, you'll be able to add those in as well, so it'll keep a track of your exercise.
That's not going to make a very good elevation change chart, is it?
No. But what'll be quite good is when I do the little review, I'll put in a couple of routes that I've done, and it's just actually really good to see it. You know,
the charts that it outputs look great. I mean,
they are.
I've looked at a couple of the walks you've been on. They, you know, it's just interesting to see it.
Yeah,
it gives you where you've been and the kind of height different changes.
Exactly. And one of the things that they added in, which actually it'd been working great for me. And then they added in a new feature that allows you to edit your route. And I thought, well, I'm never going to need it. But it was one time GPS messed up. And within the space of about a minute, I thought I'd walked 20 miles. And I guess it's just the GPS lock, whether it lost it or changed it, I don't know. But it was great. Load it into the website and you can just pick the points and just bring them back to where they are. And it recalculates your distance and recalculates the amount of calories you've burned off. And I can't recommend it highly enough. I know there's other apps on the iPhone that I think one's called Trails. There's a couple others that I tried at the start and they just weren't reliable for me. This has never let me down.
One question I did have was, does it last on the battery, or do you need a sort of backup battery?
So right at the start, it was actually quite heavy on the battery. Using GPS on the iPhone does drain the battery quite quickly. And there was things like you couldn't turn the screen off. You could lock the screen, but your screen was always on. So there was some advice like, you know, turn off 3G, turn off Wi-Fi, you turn your screen down to as dim as possible. But they've now got it where you can actually just turn the screen off and it still works. So the improvements they've made have actually been really good. I picked up, I think it was a Kensington battery pack, which plugs in and basically gives me another full charge and a half. I guess if you're doing a run, it's going to last. I mean, I'm getting probably about 3 to 3.5, well, maybe 4 hours of usage out of it, and that's with I'm not using any music at the same time. So I'm guessing if you're out for a run or on a bike, you're maybe going to get an hour and a half, 2 hours out of it. So you're going to need a battery pack probably. But I think that applies to any apps. They've certainly made improvements since the start. It's a lot better. I mean, I've noticed in my more recent last couple of hill walks I've done, it lasts a lot longer before I need to recharge.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think the best thing about it is that they are always adding new features and they listen to what their users are doing.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, they're active. You know, they've got a Twitter account, they've got a blog, they've got a forum. They're always asking for, you know, how can we improve and what we can do, and they're constantly making changes. Really, really good. Highly recommended. And that's us for another week. Fantastic. And it's all gone quiet.
I'm down to my last little bit of energy.
Oh, it can't be that bad.
I was hoping we'd keep this one under an hour, but we've just gone a little bit over.
Have we?
Yeah, it's not too bad though. I think it's fine.
Yeah, I blame the amount of times Chris took at the start to do that first article.
Shush now.
I'm not supposed to mention. That's five goes you had at that. Cannot believe it.
Well, and even then, it still wasn't very good.
I didn't want to say. Maybe I should just cut out that whole first bit.
I think so, and then we can be under an hour.
Yeah. So, Shaquille, where can we find out more about you?
Blog, shaquillenaim.com. Twitter, ShaqN.
Chris, where can we find out more about you?
I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK, and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
And for me, my blog's END.net, and Twitter, I am Sweeper. If you want to find out more about Digital Outbox, then our website is digitaloutbox.com. And seeing as he's only mentioned it twice, I may as well mention it again. Chris did a great screencast this week, so it's well worth checking out if you want to find out the latest features of Chrome. If you want to get in touch with us, info@digitaloutbox.com. Which reminds me, Jim did get in touch last week about high-def movies on iTunes.
Yes, he did.
And seemingly it was an Apple TV only feature. Which I don't have one, so I can't say. Mm. It probably is. Silence from the Mr. Nine. And we're on Twitter as well. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's Digital Outbox. And I guess one small request, if you're still here and you still like what we're doing, fire up iTunes, slap in a review, and we'd really appreciate it. And we're done.
Nice one.
So thanks for listening, and Eid Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Ah, I pressed the wrong button. That was a long version. Not the medium one.
That was like the day-to-day intro.
Oh. Like.
That was as long as what Chris took to do that first article.
Paul, oh, if you're still listening, we need that sound. I need that intro music pronto.
Yes, help us. Help us.
Oh, never again.